I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, as Israel celebrates 60 years of independence this week, a dispute among the country's top rabbis threatens the validity of hundreds, if not thousands, of conversions, with profound implications for the convert's relationship to the Jewish state. We'll talk about why that is, and you'll have your say in our Back Talk segment. But first, it's the time of the week when we talk politics, and we are pleased to have with us once again the architect, Karl Rove. He is the former senior advisor and deputy chief of staff to President George W. Bush. Mr. Rove resigned that post in August, but he's keeping his hand in the game as a political analyst for major news outlets. We're happy to have you back with us. Thanks for talking to us.
You bet, Michelle, and thanks for coming close to saying Fox News.
Well, I have you for that. So.
Yeah, there we go.
Let's start out with this week's news. On the Democratic side, on the one hand, a split decision. Each one took one. Clinton took Indiana. Obama took North Carolina. She's saying she's still in it. His people are saying it's pretty much over. Who's right?
Well, Senator Obama is right, and Senator Clinton has the right to say what she said as well. It was a split decision. The problem was that she lost North Carolina by a pretty substantial margin and won Indiana by a narrow margin, and as a result came out of the night with the all-important delegate count getting more lopsided. She's now 150-some-odd delegates behind Senator Obama, and in order for her to win the nomination, she would have to take 70% of the delegates who are going to be elected in the remaining contest for the superdelegates who have yet to make a commitment, and that's a very, 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 very steep hill to climb. In all the 47 contests that have been held thus far, she's gotten 70% in one state, Arkansas, and it's hard to believe that in the remaining contests in West Virginia, Oregon, Montana, South Dakota, Kentucky, and Puerto Rico, that there's going to be territory as hospitable to her as her old home state.
Her argument continues to be that she's got a, why don't we just let her tell us what her argument is. Here's something that she said to a reporter, Kathy Keeley, who's writing for USA Today. Here it is.
There was just an AP article posted that found how Senator Obama's support among hardworking Americans, white Americans, is weakening again, and how whites in both states who had not completed college were supporting me. And in independence, I was running even with him and doing even better with Democratic-leaning independents. I have a much broader base to build a winning coalition on.
Now, the last time you visited with us, we talked about this whole question of who could draw which voters. And you said you thought Americans would love to elect an African-American president or a woman president. In your piece in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, though, you seem to be kind of co-signing Hillary Clinton's point of view. You said that the primary has created a deep fissure in the Democratic ranks. Blue-collar, less affluent, less educated voters versus the white wine crowd of academics, upscale professionals, along with blacks and young women. And you go on to talk about potential defections of Democrats to Republicans. I guess we could call those the McCainocrats.
McCainocrats.
What's the basis of these defections? Is it race, culture, policy?
I think it's several things. I do think part of it is a reaction to Senator Obama's sort of elitist sentiments expressed in his famous Pacific Palisades comment of Pennsylvanians and rural people and small-town people in general are bitter because of economic anxiety and hence cling to their guns, their faith, and their xenophobia. And I think that has resonated pretty widely. In fact, if you look at Pennsylvania, in the 50 smallest counties in Pennsylvania in the Democratic primary, Hillary Clinton won it by 65-35. She carried those counties by a net of 278,000 votes in a state that she won by 208,000 votes. In fact, her margin, and her entire margin, came from outside the big cities. I mean, she lost the big cities 43-57, but won the rest of the state big enough to carry it by, you know, nearly 10 points. And this is happening around the country. And it's also, you know, there's always divisions in a primary, and there are always people who say I'm for one person and people who say I'm for the other. What's interesting is we have begun to see this racial divide with African-American voters breaking for Obama by more than 90% and white voters breaking for Hillary Clinton by margins of 3-2 or better. And then the feeling's getting harder. In Indiana and North Carolina, less than half of Hillary Clinton supporters said they were prepared to vote for Senator Obama if he were the nominee. And that's a very, very dangerous sign.
You think that's race?
I think it is right. And in fact,
I'm saying, do you think that's race?
Oh, do I think it's race? No, I don't. I think a large part of it is that they view Senator Clinton as more culturally attuned to them, and they view Senator Obama as a liberal elitist who's looking down his nose at them, because these are people who predominantly live in, you know, it's more pronounced in rural and small town parts of the state.
On the other hand, you've had some high profile Obamacans, like Doug Kimmick, a conservative law professor, and also I think your former colleague in the White House, Anna Perez, who's supporting Obama. Do you think what do you think is the basis of that? And do you think that holds, that crossover holds?
Well, there are always crossovers in every election for reasons of personal attraction and choice. People who are Democrats support a Republican, and people who are Republicans support a Democrat. What's interesting is, let's take a quantitative look at it. I think there have now been 6 surveys, which the crosstabs have been released, so you can get a good look into the internals of them. And in those surveys, the pattern holds up that roughly twice as many Democrats defect to McCain as do Republicans defect to Obama, and about 3 times as many Democrats defect to McCain as Republicans defect to Clinton. So I know the media is all wired up about the Obamacans, but pretty persistently over the course of the last several months, the McCainocrats, the Democrats defecting to McCain, have been a larger phenomenon. In fact,
So it's more voters rather than high-profile
folks.
Right,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, I'm talking all things politics with Karl Rove. He's the former senior advisor and deputy chief of staff to President George W. Bush. Let's talk about Senator McCain. When he was still contesting for the nomination, a lot of talk about his problems with the conservative base. So he's had some time to coalesce, build a team. Is he doing what he needs to do?
Well, he's done the biggest part of what he needs to do, that is to say, unify the party. That's why in these head-to-head matchups with both Obama and Clinton, he's very competitive. Depending on what poll you look at, he's a couple of points ahead or a couple of points behind, but essentially very competitive with the Democrats, either one of them. And if you look in the internals of that, he has united the Republican Party. Where his remaining problem is the level of enthusiasm among many Republicans. Now, the irony is that their level of enthusiasm is impacted by the same qualities that give him crossover appeal. He's a maverick who has broken with his party in the past, is engaged in high-profile bipartisan efforts with Democrats in the Senate, and, you know, is pretty much his own man who speaks his mind pretty clearly and sometimes upsets the party elders and the party faithful. But those things serve him well with independents and crossover Democrats, but they mean the level of enthusiasm of Republicans. They're voting for him, but the question is, will they turn out and make the phone calls, talk to their neighbors and friends, you know, walk the neighborhoods, put up the signs, slap a bumper sticker on their car, write a check to his campaign, and so forth. And that he's not yet where he needs to be.
Now, speaking of party elders, we've talked a lot about the whole race-gender issue on the Democratic side, but what about age? If John McCain is elected, he'll be the oldest president we've ever elected. Do you think his age is a factor in this race?
You know, I think people will some people will be concerned about it, and some of the press will examine it. I know one group in the press that is not going to make an issue of his age, and that's the press that covers him day to day. In fact, when I talk to them, you know, you get a sense of exhaustion from them. It's like, you know, why do we have to get up so early and go so hard for so long for so many days? When is he going to give us a break by taking some time off the road? McCain is a very energetic and very aggressive candidate, and anybody who follows him closely realizes he is a very energetic 71.
It's interesting, if Obama's the nominee, you've got 2 candidates who are both considered media darlings.
Right.
You'd be wondering which is more beloved in
right.
the end. Who's more of a darling in the end? Okay, let's have some fun speculation. What would you look for in a vice presidential candidate for the 2 presumptive nominees? What's the profile for Senator McCain?
You know, it's funny. I used to always think about this question in essentially political terms, which let's do that for a minute. But you know, what's really true is that each one of them needs to look at their possible choice from the position of governing more than anything else. Who is the person who can help them do a better job of managing the federal government than anybody else? you know, who would be the best person to be president if something were to happen to them. So, you know, most of us, at the, particularly at this time, we're looking at, you know, who gives them an advantage with a critical voting block, or who gives them an advantage with this state or that state. But I've come to believe over the years that that as much as we fixate on that, that, you know, at the end of the day, the vice president brings you little in that regard, but what they can or cannot bring to you, and once you get there, it becomes far more important.
Sounds like you're saying both of those men, if both of those guys are the nominees, need a governor.
No, I'm saying bring somebody that you examine, whom you know, whose judgment you have confidence in, whose loyalty is not in question, who has an agenda that mixes with yours, and who can be a candid and frank and thoughtful partner in governing. And, you know, that may be a governor, it may not be a governor. Governors tend to have a little bit better experience at simply the act of executive decision-making than members of Congress do, because, you know, just, you know, the way that you make a decision as an executive is, you know, yes or no. Members of Congress, it's, you know, what's the best possible decision I can make today, given the negotiations that I've been engaged in with my colleagues, or the necessities of my reelection, or, you know, the tone of my caucus. And, not to belittle that, because those are all important considerations, mm-hmm. but I just think, you know, that over time, it's why we've had a lot more governors in the modern era than we've had members of Congress.
Well, speaking of big decisions, I understand you're in Texas this weekend, and I assume you're there for the wedding of a lovely young lady, president's daughter. I hope you got her something nice.
You know, I was told that you have up to a year to get a gift.
Sounds to me like you might need some high-level advice on this.
Nor denying the purpose of my visit to Texas, but I have been told that the wedding etiquette is that you've got up to a year.
I think I can help you with this one.
All right.
Okay. Karl Rove, former senior advisor and deputy chief of staff to President George W. Bush, we thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Come back and see us.
You bet.